Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, embarking on hour number two of the Fan Evening Show. My name is Jack Hillgrove. Joel Nelson is behind the glass. Spent the first hour talking about the Pirates. We'll get back into that as the show rolls along. But now we switch to the gridiron and your Pittsburgh Steelers, 3-1 heading into an early bye in 2025. No Steelers football this weekend. They return to action next Sunday, October the 12th, first divisional game against the Cleveland Browns. But as we get set to embark on this bye week, we head out to the fan hotline and find DK Pittsburgh Sports' Chris Halleck, who covers the team. Chris, good to talk to you, my friend. As we head into the bye week, what grade, an overall grade, do we give the Pittsburgh Steelers and their 3-1 start to the season?
I'd probably give a B plus. Obviously, results mean everything in the NFL. I mean, they're 3-1, so it almost doesn't matter how they got to 3-1. They're 3-1. The Ravens would kill to be 3-1 right now. The Bengals would kill to be 3-1 and have a healthy Joe Burrow right now. The Steelers are, yes, they're banged up, but they have 3 wins in 4 games. It could be better, but the good thing is they're trending in the right direction. So I'll give it a B+.
As far as injuries are concerned, Jalen Ramsey, Calvin Austin, those guys expected to be sidelined. It seems like the bye is well-timed as it can be for those guys that have gotten banged up, and we're still obviously waiting for some guys to come back. But what can you tell us about some of the latest as far as the injuries are concerned to a couple of those guys?
Well, unfortunately, it's not that much more. You know, there's not much more to know now. I was on the south side today when the team was there. I did not see Jalen Ramsey. I did see Calvin Austin. He was not in a sling, but that doesn't really give you anything in terms of a prognosis when it comes to, hey, he was in a sling Sunday, he's not in a sling now. But it's really kind of too early to tell. I would assume, though, with a hamstring injury for Ramsey, that it's most likely not going to be something that's going to be quick. Maybe he misses a game or two. The good thing is they're getting Joey Porter Jr. back. He was getting really close to returning against the Vikings with the bye week this week, and then you would think that Porter would be be good to go. So at least it's, you know, you lose one guy, you get another guy back. But for Austin, though, on the other hand, it's unfortunately too early to tell how long he's going to be out, but multiple games would not surprise me.
That's Chris Halleck, covers the Steelers for DK Pittsburgh Sports. With that, and let's stay with Ramsey, like a lot of the talk about Jalen Ramsey entering this tenure of his career with the Steelers, insert Ramsey, exit Minkah Fitzpatrick, was that Ramsey was going to fill that role and move all over the secondary. We've seen that through the first 4 games. I think he's played extremely well. What's the answer from Mike Tomlin? Is it just straight up, you know, 2 safeties and that it's Juan Thornhill and Chuck Clark? Like, how do they fill that gap without, you know, Jalen Ramsey being available to them?
Well, Brandon Echols could and should be an option. He has done nothing but impress the coaching staff. I mean, he had a great training camp, a great preseason, and he's played well. I mean, he's been around plays that, I mean, shoot, man, he had the interception in New England. He's just been around the ball, and that could be one guy that comes in and can play nickel. So you think, okay, if Ramsey's out and Porter's in, you know, Porter and Slay can play on the outside, you could have nickel, or you can have Echols in the nickel. That could be an option. Yeah, you can run with the 3 safeties, like running your big nickel where you have Clark and Thornhill as your 2 higher safeties, and then have Deshaun Elliott playing like a big nickel type which is what they were doing, ironically, on the play that they busted the coverage where Elliott was actually in the nickel there. But the main reason why that happened was because, well, Ramsey is their primary communicator in the secondary. He wasn't on the field. So that's probably going to be the even bigger issue, is who takes over as the primary communicator in the secondary while Ramsey's out.
Yeah, my guy that I thought could have potentially made the team before the Ramsey trade or the Chuck Clark signing too was Sebastian Castro. He is headed to the Buccaneers, so that's not an option to be elevated either. Chris, as far as the Vikings game goes, a lot has been made of the decision or just the way that the punt ended up in the end zone at the last play of the game. And Danny Smith talked about that today, explained, you know, you don't want a big return to try and get them back in the field. And that makes sense. But, you know, from when I was watching it, I'm like, well, why not punt the ball into the corner and try to pin them even deeper? What did you make of the explanation from Danny Smith today as to why that last punt and the strategy there was to just, you know, punt it into the end zone and avoid the return altogether?
I mean, I understand it. You know, listen, the Vikings were, you know, they're going to have the ball on the 40-yard line. If the Steelers went for it and didn't get it. So you make them go another 20 yards. So, like, think about it. If they're on the 40 and they have to get in the field goal range, they only have to go about 20 yards. If you punt it into the end zone, no matter what, they can't get any further than the 20 because of the touchback. So now they've got to go 40 yards with no timeouts, which is not – no, it's not that far, but with the way the defense was playing, I understand the rationale behind – not just deciding to punt, but to punt where no matter what, they're not going to be any further downfield than the 20-yard line. Because, yes, you could try to do like a coffin corner punt, something like that, but what if it goes wrong? What if he doesn't get it out of bounds? What if it hits right by the sideline and then bounces back into play, and then something weird or bonky happens? You never know which way that ball is going to bounce. I understand the rationale behind, let's just get it out of the end zone, no return at all, make them go 40, 45 yards to get a field goal with no timeouts with the way our defense is playing. And it worked out because the defense ended up standing tall.
Chris Halleck on the Fan Hotline covers the Steelers for DK Pittsburgh Sports. Aaron Rodgers, you graded the team B+ from an overall aspect through the first four games as they start 3-1. The grade you give Aaron Rodgers is
A-, and it's a lot different than the one PFF gives Aaron Rodgers. Listen, people are going to look at the passing charts and be like, he's not throwing the ball downfield, and he's not. You know, the average depth of target is lowest among all qualifying quarterbacks. You know, I get it. I understand that. And I even specifically asked Arthur Smith today if, like, this is another way that you are trying to take chunks out of the defense. Other than, because last year we've seen what an offense looks like whenever you do nothing but throw deep balls to try to take chunks out of the defense. And it's very volatile. Yes, it can work sometimes, but there's no consistency there. We are seeing more consistency in this offense with the way Aaron Rodgers can operate in the quick game, the way he can get rid of the ball very, very, very quickly. And we're seeing it. And it's not just like, you know, a quick hitch or a quick out, the quick, you know, back shoulder throw to DK Metcalf down the sideline. The really, really quick one where he hit Metcalf over the middle on the first series that led to a touchdown and on obviously the 80-yarder to Metcalf. With everything that he's doing in the quick game to provide the consistency there, along with all of the intangible things that cannot be measured, cannot be quantified, what he does, the leader that he is in the locker room, the communication that he has before the snap, what he can do with his cadence, all of the other intangible things, he is playing quarterback very, very, very well. Is he MVP level? No, he's not. But within what the Steelers want to do on offense, he is playing quarterback at a high level, and that's why I would give him like an A-.
Chris, what else needs to improve as the Steelers come back from the bye and rattle off a couple of divisional games against Cleveland and Cincinnati on the 12th and a short week on the 16th? Like, I know the offensive line, it seemed like Broderick Jones took a step forward against Minnesota. Keanu Benton was under big-time scrutiny and played tremendously, I thought, against the Vikings. It looks like the areas of concern, not injury-related, have improved a little bit. What else needs to happen for the Steelers to trend in the right direction and trend towards a division title? Because you look at the three other teams in the division and the way things are going for them, it's not out of the question, in my mind, to think the Steelers could end up being big time in the AFC North conversation as we head into Week 18.
Yeah, I think what we saw from the defense was, you know, when the first couple of games happened and they were playing really poorly, you know, it was like, okay, the defense is going to figure it out. And we've been kind of seeing that happen over the last couple of weeks. You know, they've gotten back to getting after the quarterback and taking the ball away. And, you know, now they're second best in terms of turnover margin in the league. They've racked up 11 sacks over the last 2 weeks. So the defense is kind of figuring itself out. On the offensive side, this game against Minnesota was kind of the start to what they need to be doing more of. It all starts with running the ball. It has to start with running the ball. Everything else revolves around having to run the football. But then when you think about what a prototypical Arthur Smith offense is, and I think about in Tennessee, when he was successful in Tennessee, everybody wants to be like, it was because of Derrick Henry. No, it wasn't just because of Derrick Henry. Yes, they could take chunks out of the defense with Derrick Henry, but then they hit a lot of these catch and run type passes. That's what we're seeing. They also, those Titans, hit a lot of, off of the running game, a lot of play action stuff that helped, that took the top off the defense. That's why Ryan Tannehill had such good years, because he would throw those passes with such a high efficiency that they would be able to do that stuff too. So I think the next step for the offense is continue to run the ball, continue to have these quick hitters that give you yards after the catch, which, by the way, the Steelers lead the league in yak right now, but then add on being able to use play action to hit over the middle, to hit those intermediate passes, and then as you run the ball better and more consistently, and as you continue to hit these quick hitters underneath, you force defenses to bring an extra guy down low, and then that's when you could take the top off the defense. So I think that's the next step, is being able to then add on stretching the ball downfield with running the ball and with the quick game.
Chris Halleck of DK Pittsburgh Sports. Chris, I'm going to, let's put a percentage on it and let's take everything into account. What you have seen and what you have witnessed from the Steelers through the first four games and what's going on in Cincy, what's going on in Cleveland, and what's going on in Baltimore. The percent chance that the Steelers are AFC North champs in your mind is what?
It's still too early, man. I understand the Ravens are 1-3 and then, you know, Lamar Jackson is injured. But to me, I still don't rule the Ravens out. I'm ruling the Bengals out. I ruled the Bengals out before Joe Burrow got hurt. I never bought into the Bengals. The Browns I've not bought into, even though their defense can make it very difficult for teams. I'm going to give it like a – I'm still going like a 50% chance. I'm not going that high yet. It's just now about to be October. It's still very, very early in the season. We've seen what can happen when a team gets out to a 10-3 start and still doesn't win its division. It's still too early for me to put like a really high percentage that this team is going to end up winning the AFC North. The Ravens, with the talent that they have, they showed it last year, because last year that defense was leaking in a bad way in terms of giving up explosive plays. They figured it out, and they turned their season around on a dime. All it takes is a good run. And we knew the Ravens were going to have a really tough start to their season with the way the schedule looked. I'm just not ready to put anything past like a 50-50 split between the Ravens and the Steelers. The good thing is right now the Steelers have a two-game advantage right now. That's the best way that I can put it in terms of any kind of optimism.
No, I'm glad you said that, because we're still coming off of the seventh straight year that Mike Tomlin's Steelers had a three-game losing streak. And for the fifth time in that 7 years, it happened in December and or post Thanksgiving, which was is obviously the time that divisions are won and lost. So I would agree with you, and I'm glad that you said that. I just brought it up because, you know, things don't look great for the three other teams now. How was Dublin, by the way? I had major FOMO seeing tweets and everybody else from on the beat. I want your take because I have Irish heritage and I have never been there. So what was your take of Dublin for the time you were there?
It was amazing. I did not have time to do everything I wanted to do. I wanted to go and see the Irish countryside, and I didn't. I was working every day that I was there. I really didn't have just even a day that I could set aside and sightsee or anything. But, you know, we do a lot of work, you know, on our app at DK Pittsburgh Sports. And so, yeah, but I had enough time to really go all around Dublin. It did not take me long to get a pint of Guinness while I was there. It does taste way better over there. They pour it differently. We need to be instructing bars here like the proper way to pour a Guinness because they do it way better over there. It was awesome though. It's a great town. I can't wait to go back. And next time I go, I'm bringing my wife and kids with me because unfortunately they weren't able to come with me. But it was amazing. It exceeded the hype. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I have my sights set on a 2027 trip when Pitt plays in that week zero classic over there against Wisconsin to start the college football season. So that's when I have my sights set. That's Chris Alec. He covers the Steelers for DKPittsburghSports.com. Chris, always appreciate you, brother. We'll do it again soon. Take care.
All right, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Yep, no problem. There he goes, Chris Halleck of DK Pittsburgh Sports. Jolie, I didn't ask him about this because there's always one, right? A to Z Sports. We've got 20,000 followers on X. There's an article. It's just titled, "It Suddenly Seems Possible, ... the Steelers wide receivers room is broken and AJ Brown seems frustrated in Philly. At NFL Rob, that's Rob Gregson, says it's time for Omar Khan to go all in on a blockbuster trade. Chalk up AJ Brown on the board to the next bona fide stud wide receiver that's coming to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're like, what, 1 for 15? They got DK Metcalf, obviously. But he is now on the list of the likes of who? Brandon Ayuk, Terry McLaurin.
CeeDee Lamb, you want to throw him in that mix?
I don't remember CeeDee Lamb. Was there?
I saw a graphic of, you know, what I think it was maybe FanDuel. Like, would you make this? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll throw CeeDee Lamb on
this hypothetical trade where
T. Higgins, that would have been a free agent signing. But yeah, T. Higgins was tossed around. Look, I am of the belief that the Steelers need to do more in the wide receivers room, and we could talk about this in the next segment, but like, there is just a much more feasible way to have that conversation. Somewhere in between another ridiculous blockbuster trade and the floor being a BS trade deadline deal for a silly guy like Mike Williams. That's probably going to happen again this season. I think that's what we're trending towards, but there's got to be a happy medium because if Calvin Austin truly does miss time, I don't know that the Steelers' production will take a huge hit because in the same way that it did with George Pickens last year, but I think it will, and it just makes oppositions easier to double up on DK Metcalf. So hopefully it gets addressed. Will it get addressed with AJ Brown? No, I would do a naked lap around this building if A.J. Brown was traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Fun fact, Those guys would be reunited.
Yes, they
DK
would.
DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown.
You know, it's funny. With
Chad Kelly as their Ole Miss quarterback from back in the day.
My cousin and I was at my cousin's on Sunday watching the later NFL games, and that topic came up. Like, why were the 2018 Ole Miss, that year that they were both on the same college team. They went 5-7. Like, why were they that bad? There was another NFL wide receiver on that team as well. Elijah Moore.
Oh, that's right.
Elijah Moore, DK Metcalf, and AJ Brown all on the same team. Now, Metcalf didn't play a lot in 18. I believe he was hurt. And Elijah Moore, Dawson Knox.
Really? Yes. I did not know that. How about that? Wow.
And you want to know why they stunk? Jordan Tamau was their quarterback.
Something made me think it was Chad Kelly. I guess not.
Chad Kelly, Shea Patterson in 2017. Chad Kelly was, I think, earlier than that. Chad Kelly's senior year was 2016.
I was way off. Wow.
He threw to Van Jefferson.
It's not bad.
And Evan Engram. But that's about it.
My buddies and I were talking about maybe Chris Olave would be the reasonable choice, realistic choice for the Steelers. Maybe there's still a little something there. He's still pretty young. Now, if he takes one big hit, he's had a pretty bad concussion history for being in the league for only a few years, but...
Yeah, it's definitely more feasible. Like, when I hear you say that, it's definitely more of a feasible option than A.J. Brown. Like, how many times have we seen NFL wide receivers get pissed off with their situations and then they just suck it up? Like, the Eagles are 4-0. The Eagles are the defending Super Bowl champions. The Eagles are not going to trade their number one wide receiver in the middle of the season because he's upset. You know what's going to make him not upset? Them winning the Super Bowl again. And then if he's really fed up in Philly, you trade him in the offseason. That's not going to happen in 2025, especially midseason. Now, Chris Olave? Yeah, because the Saints are putrid. One more thing before the break. Do you listen to Pardon My Take?
Not a whole lot.
They were talking about the 0-10 club. I guess Spencer Rattler is on the verge of starting his NFL career 0-10 through his first 10 starts. And some of the names in that club do not make me think that Spencer Rattler has any chance of turning his career around and having a pretty decent NFL career. I mean, we're talking about like guys like DeShone Kizer, Brody Croyle. The best one of them all is David Carr.
And if he's the best one on that list, I think that tells you all you pretty much need to know about that list.
Yeah. So there you have it. The Saints stink. So Chris Olave, maybe. A.J. Brown, definitely not. You could use that Odyssey Rewind feature to go back and listen to our conversation with Chris Halleck of DK Pittsburgh Sports. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And Chris was on the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. Coming up, bye week punt or go for it. It's our silly football theme name for a buy or sell segment. Jolie will throw me some takes about the Steelers' first four games heading into the bye. I will either punt or go for it on fourth down, depending on what Jolie brings to the table. That's next, and then your phone calls at 412-928-9370. It's a Fan Evening Show. I'm Jack Hillgrove on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Texter earlier in the show asking if there's a chance that Eli Holstein doesn't start on Saturday. We will talk Pitt in the next hour. Stephen Thompson of the Post-Gazette will join us in roughly 30 minutes, and we'll get into the Panthers and the Nittany Lions in the 8 o'clock hour. Joe Smeltzer of Nittany Sports Now coming up at 8:45. Right now, it's still Steelers talk. And before we get into Jolie and I's version of the bye week, punt or go for it, let's go out to the fan hotline. Pittsburgh Phil checking in. What's up, Phil?
Jack, my buddy, my cousin from Seattle was right. You know, both Seattle teams won that night. And then we got a win. I told you you can't bet Carson Wentz as a favorite. He's not a good favorite, Jack.
I'm not upset about being wrong. I just had no faith in the Steelers to be able to hold up with that offense, and I was wrong. Keanu Benton played one heck of a game. The defense flew around to the football, and for once, Phil, they played like the highest-paid defense in the league, which was a sight for sore eyes.
That's not why I called you. I called you because the guy you just had on is absolutely wrong. They are not a B+. They're a C at best. I don't care if they're 3-1. They could play way better than they're playing. That's number one. And number two, this team right here has to win that game on offense. Forget about it. If they tell you anything different, they're wrong. They have to win that on offense.
What do you mean? Like, what are you referring to? Like, the offense has to, like, be able to go down the field and win them games? Or I'm not
sure. No, I'm talking about the last play of the game, when they punted. They have to go for that. They have to go. Aaron Rodgers says we have to win that on offense. He's right. We have to win that on offense.
No. Phil. That not the goal line play. When there was 12 seconds remaining in the game, when they punted it into the end zone, they were at the 40-yard line.
No, I'm saying when it was time for them to punt or get off the pot, they needed to go for that. That's what they needed to do.
I don't think we're talking about the same play, Phil.
Yeah, we are. Oh, you guys are talking about a different play.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No. You're talking about when they ran it on fourth down with Kenneth Gainwell and didn't score?
Yes.
We were talking about the final offensive play that the Steelers ran with 12 seconds left and no timeouts, and Corliss Waitman, instead of trying to cough and corner it, just punted it straight into the end zone.
Well, the 15 yards, what difference did it make?
Yeah. That's what you're talking about. No, we didn't get into, I agree with you. Yeah, they needed to punch him in the mouth and go for the knockout punch. That I am in wholehearted agreement with.
Okay, so I was a little mixed up.
No, you're all good. That's why productive conversations filler had. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I just got to say, you know, we have a lot of room to improve. You know, B+ is a real high rating in the NFL. I like what he does. I guess he's a pretty good writer or whoever he is. But, I mean, B+. You know who B+ is? Detroit. B+ is Philadelphia. Or an A-. Not the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're a C. We're getting a little bit better each week.
All right, Phil, thanks for the call, man. Yeah, I'm not going to go as low as a C for a team that's 3-1. And the Eagles are not a B+ team at 4-0. They're an A+ team at a 4-0. It doesn't matter. Again, results matter. And I think a B+ grade is fair, because I think a B+ grade takes into account that the Steelers need to do things better. But at the same time of needing to do things better, they are 3-1. B, maybe a little bit. B+ might be just a slight too generous. B might make more sense. But I'm not going to cause a fuss for Chris Halleck, who does a phenomenal job covering the Steelers. If you miss Chris, rewind it. Listen to our chat. Covers the team for DK Pittsburgh Sports. I'm not going to split hairs and say that he's incorrect for calling a team that's 3-1 a B+ heading into their bye week. Because results do matter, and the Steelers have won more games than they've lost. They're 3-1. We can nitpick later on. But for right now, bye week, punt or go for it. Jolie's going to bring us some takes. We will agree or disagree. Jolie, my only request before you get going, I don't even have to get it out of my mouth. There he goes. That's why he's the best damn producer in the land. Joel Nelson. All right, punter, go for it. Take number one. Fire away, sir.
DK Metcalf's career high in receiving yards is 1,303. Through four games, he's at 261. Does DK Metcalf set a career high in receiving yards? Does he essentially get 1,300 or more? He's currently at 261.
What is it?
1,303 on the dot.
260. He's at a 65-yard-per-game pace. And if he keeps up, He's at 1,100 yards. I'm going to punt. I'm going to say he slightly improves the yards per game number. Even if it's 75 yards a game through 17 games, that's 1,275. So I think he's on pace for somewhere in between 1,100 or 1,200 yards. And what was the year he had the career high? Is that with Russ? Was that with Russ?
That's a great question. I would think so.
What year was it? Or am I putting you on the spot? I apologize.
Try and find
one thousand. What DK Metcalf eclipsing his career yards per game with Aaron Rodgers?
It was with Russell Wilson because it was 2020,
and that was like MVP Russ that year.
Pretty much.
Aaron Rodgers is not as good as Russell Wilson was in 2020. For that, I'll say no, but he will definitely eclipse 1,000. And if you ask me to bet on him getting to 1,100 receiving yards, I would say he does. But I will punt on career high. What's next?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A less productive pass catcher so far, Pat Freiermuth, 65 yards on the year, only one catch across his past two games. Now, obviously, it can't get any worse than this, but would you punt or pass on saying that Pat Freiermuth can begin to break out a little bit, or is it more towards, is he, you know, is this one of those, is what he is
so
for the rest of the season?
I love Pat. I love Pat as a guy in that locker room. I love Pat as a player in the league, and I think he has a lot to bring to NFL rosters. Because I think that, I think you'll see Pat Freiermuth improve exponentially. I think a lot of people are, again, you know, it's the business and it's the fandom and it's having hot takes. I think people are quick to jump to conclusions. And quick to make something, I don't want to call it something out of nothing because he's only been targeted 3, 4, and 3 times through the first three games, was not targeted at all. Pat Freiermuth is not in the doghouse. Pat Freiermuth is not getting passed up on the depth chart by Jonnu Smith or Darnell Washington. He didn't play as much against Minnesota because Pat's not a great run blocker, and the Steelers' game plan, plain as day, black and white, was to run the dang ball, Bert. Sandra Bullock in the blind side. So if you want to run the football against a team like Minnesota, who was banged up on defense and was easily able to run the ball against, Pat Freiermuth doesn't equate into that for catching passes because there's only one football to go around. And if you're going to place a heavier emphasis on running the ball than normal, the targets are going to go down. And you're not going to see Pat on those plays anyway because he's not as good of a run blocker as a guy like Darnell Washington or Jonnu Smith. So pump the brakes on the Pat Freiermuth concern. He'll be okay. So I'll go for it there. Pat Freiermuth, he'll be fine. Is he going to have maybe as good of a year last year? No, maybe not. I mean, he was banged up in 23 last year with Art Smith, 7 touchdowns. I don't think he gets to 7 touchdowns and 10 yards of reception, but he'll have a nice little year for himself. And we're not going to be questioning the Pat Freiermuth contract extension and how much money he's making by the end of the season. I have faith in that.
Number 3. So the Steelers already basically in need of that important wide receiver too. Calvin Austin is down for the next handful of games. Do you trust the Steelers' plan with their wide receiver group come the trade deadline or a little bit before the trade deadline? We're into the nitty-gritty of the final month of the season. Do you have trust that they will improve it, or do you think it'll end up staying where it is?
So, as far as names that have been tossed around to get dealt at the deadline. One of them had a horrible injury last night. That was Tyreek Hill. I thought that was feasible. If the Steelers, and there are reports that they want to go out and make a big time splash, the Dolphins stink and Tyreek wanted out of Miami. I thought that was a much more realistic option than somebody tossing out AJ Brown. But that takes a big time option off the table. Jacoby Myers was not happy. Chris Olave, the Saints stink. And Jerry Jeudy, they're throwing out. Now, that's not going to happen because it's in the division. But there are better wide receivers that could potentially be traded than the Steelers just ending up with Mike Williams last year. They're going to try. The trade deadline is November 4th. Let's take a gander at the Pittsburgh Steelers schedule. November 2nd, they play Indianapolis. So assuming that anybody traded on the November 4th deadline would be available for the Sunday game against the Chargers on Sunday Night Football November 9th. The Steelers will play four games from now until the trade deadline. Cleveland, Cincy, Green Bay, Indy. The only road game is at Cincinnati. They could win all four of those games. And at the very least, I think they go 3 of 4. So let's just say for the sake of argument, they are 6 and 2 going to Los Angeles on Sunday, November 9th. Or heading into the trade deadline. They're going to trade for a wide receiver. Just like they did last year. So yeah, if the question is, are they going to get somebody better than Mike Williams? I'll go there. I'll go for it there.
Okay, well, it just so happens that number four, will the Steelers go 3-1 over their next four games?
I stole your thunder, Jolie.
I guess the bet has been made on that one.
If you would have told me on September 6th, before the Steelers season began, about this specific four-game stretch out of the bye, I would have said 2-2 is more likely because I don't like a Thursday night game in Cincinnati. That was obviously before Joe Burrow got hurt. Jake Browning stinks. Jake Browning is like, I go back and look at the Steelers' backup situation when Ben would go down. Like, Charlie Batch was good enough to get Mike Wallace the football. Michael Vick in those couple games was good enough to get AB the ball. Batch and Leftwich to get Heath Miller in space. Like, those guys were serviceable enough to get the playmakers the Steelers had on the offense the football. Jake Browning cannot find Ja'Marr Chase if Ja'Marr Chase was 30 feet tall. It is bad. So I think they'll definitely win on Thursday in Cincinnati. Oh, I shouldn't say definitely because they lost to freaking Ryan Finley.
I was just going to mention that, but any vibes related to that.
This Bengals defense is really bad too. The only way that the Browns beat the Steelers coming out of the bye is if it's like 6-3 or 10-7 because the Browns offense is non-existent. Honestly, the one that scares me more than is Indianapolis. I have faith in Aaron Rodgers to be able to come out and beat his former team in primetime in Pittsburgh, even though the Packers look really, really good. And Micah Parsons against the Steelers offensive line scares me. The Steelers are going to lose one of those two games. And I think the likelier one that they lose is Sunday at home against Indianapolis and not Green Bay. So to evolve that into maybe a spicy little take for you, if they're going to lose one of those games, it's going to be to the Colts.
Interesting. I would have thought it would be
Danny Dimes, man.
I don't know. I would have said the Cincinnati game just based on like those 2020 vibes when they played Ryan Finley, like
sure,
you were talking
about.
Sure,
but the Bengals defense is just too darn bad.
But the Bengals find a way to, I don't know, 16-14. If I had to make a pick for that four-game stretch. All right, lastly, the all-important question.
Uh-oh.
Do the Steelers win the AFC North? Given the, you know, Lamar Jackson.
Well,
if it's
punt or go for it, is the statement that the Steelers will win the AFC North?
Correct. Yes. Are they or are they not?
I will punt. It's looking, I mean, as a fan, you're licking your chops right now. The Bengals will not get Joe Burrow back until they might be like 6-9 or 5-8, something putrid. The Browns will have a worse record by that point. And I'm kind of piggybacking off of Chris Alec here. I am not losing faith in the Baltimore Ravens at 1-3. They've got holes, but once Lamar Jackson becomes healthy, like they will be, even if they are 2-4 heading into their bye week, I think they'll beat Houston at home next week. And then they play the Rams at home on October the 12th before they hit the bye. It's not out of the realm of possibility to say they get to 3-3. I think those are two winnable games for the Ravens. But for the sake of argument, they're 2-4. They still have to play the Dolphins, Cleveland one more time, the Jets, the Bengals twice, the Patriots, and the Bears. Those are seven games where the Ravens, top to bottom, have the better roster, hands down. You could even make that case for when they have to face the Steelers twice as well. But between Chicago, Miami, I'll throw Minnesota out of this discussion, assuming maybe J.J. McCarthy comes back by that point. But Chicago, Miami, the Browns, the Bengals twice, the Jets, and the Patriots, they win those seven games. And that is all in a time frame in which the Steelers, for the last seven seasons, have had three-game losing streaks post-Thanksgiving. For seven consecutive seasons, the Steelers have had a three-game losing streak somewhere. And for five of those seven seasons, it's come after Thanksgiving. Team was 10-3 last year. I'm not ruling out a collapse, and I'm not ruling out a Ravens bounce back. I don't think the Steelers win the AFC North. It's the safe pick. It's not the juicy one. It's not the sexy one. But I don't think the Ravens are as bad as 1-3.
If the Steelers had beaten the Seahawks, and the Steelers would be 4-0, does that change your opinion at all? That one more game?
No, because I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Ravens beat the Steelers twice. I need to see more out of the run defense. Like, so Derrick Henry had a lackluster game against the Chiefs, right? He was not the leading rusher for the Ravens. Justice Hill was. That was unlike the Ravens' rushing attack. The Steelers finally had a good run defensive game against the Vikings. The thing that's less likely to stay consistent is that Derrick Henry continues to fall off. I need to see more out of the Steelers' run defense for the next several weeks to think that they could legitimately beat the Ravens. They're going to have to beat them at least once to win the AFC North. And I need to see more out of the Steelers' run defense before I jump to that conclusion. Thank you, Jolie.
Thank you, Folsey.
Let's grab a call because our man Johnny up in Farrell's been patient. Johnny, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Jack?
How are you?
Hey, I need help with two plays, man, from the Steelers game, all right?
Yep.
The one is at the two-minute warning right before it at the end of the game. Why did Tomlin run the ball? Did he think the clock would still run after the two-minute warning? Like, honestly, like, that was a perfect time to run a play action. The defense was just ready to walk off the field. You could have done a play action, go deep right there, game over.
Yeah, one of the things, and it happened with the decision to go for it on fourth down. Like, there are things that deteriorate with age, especially with quarterbacks, and that's their ability to stay healthy and their ability to move. What doesn't deteriorate is the arm, the mind, and the confidence. And Aaron Rodgers has all three of those still. Mike Tomlin needs to learn to have a little bit more faith and confidence in Aaron Rodgers. And Mike's just hasn't been used to it, right? I mean, think of the putrid quarterback play they've had that he has had at his disposal since prime Ben. So I think Mike is just used to, you know, not having that guy, that figure at quarterback, and needs to get back to having that faith and being used to having a guy there that's just not, you know, Mitch Trubisky or Kenny Pickett.
Absolutely, and you're kind of starting to prove my point about the no huddle hurry up. Just let Aaron run it. But anyway, the second play is that interception by Pierre, man. When Greg Olsen said that they married images together to come up with one, no. Yeah, you can't do that. You can't marry images together and come up with one in your brain and say, oh, well, if you put this image with him bobbling and time it with this image, his foot, which you can't see, had to have been up and then go out of bounds.
Are you're talking about like for replay review?
Yeah, when they overturned Pierre's, that could have won the game right there.
Johnny, that's the whole point of having multiple camera angles to be able to.
But you never could see his foot. You could never see his foot from the angle you saw the bobble. They had the Mary images, is what they said. And guess that his foot had to be out while he bobbled. There's no clear image of his foot being out for him to bobble. You can't. They married images together.
And that's I would have to do some digging, but I believe how they're able to do that is because every camera angle, and I know this from like operating like not nice cameras like that, but like working in TV and operating cameras, like there are like. Each of the cameras have either the time of day with a continuous clock running that they're all synced to, or some sort of time to where they're all like synced to the same code. So like,
marrying images. To me, that sounds like digital manipulation to fit a narrative that Goodell wants to fit in New York in his basement. So you're marrying images now?
But they're able to do that because, like, just to throw out, like, right now I'm looking at the clock in the studio and it's 19:55:25. If at camera angle A, at that time you see Pierre bobbling the ball, and then camera angle B, that same time has his foot out of bounds, that's how they're able to do it.
No way, man. That does not pass the smell test. Yeah, it has to be 100% indisputable. Incontrovertible evidence. That don't sound like undisputable, uncontrovertible. That sounds like someone just said, that's not indisputable. If they would have said that it was not a catch, all right, okay, but they said it was an interception. They had to stick with it. That's what I'm saying. It's their own rule. They can't change the rule at the end of the game to screw the Steelers like Adele wants to with its old Northern Irish curse.
Yeah, no, I just disagree, Johnny. Thanks for the call, because I think they're able to figure out, like, and I wasn't sure that he was getting where I was coming from. Like, all those cameras have the time codes attached to them. I'm like 90% sure. And if he made that interception at, again, just for the sake of argument, 19:56:35, and at camera angle A, at that time, you see the bobble, and at camera angle B, at that exact same time, while you know the bobble was going on because the other angle proved it, his foot's out of bounds, then that's indisputable evidence. And I believe that's what's going on. I don't know. 93.7 The Fan will showcase a different community each Saturday through the Youth Football Showcase with a special visit from members of the fan staff. Do you want 93.7 The Fan to visit your game? Email youthsports@93.7thefan.com with your group name, your group's main contact info, potential dates, and those details you can find at 93.7thefan.com. Brought to you by Steel City Shredding, Saloni's Italian Bread Company, Pelman Electric, and Keystone Custom Apparel. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group. That's Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Temps in the 70s through the end of the week, 80s in the weekend. Get out and enjoy it because it's not going to last. Coming up to the college game we go. Pitt stinks. And we're going to talk about it with Stephen Thompson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. They have problems. Hopefully Stephen can address them. And I'm going to apologize to him and right now because I know Stephen's a Red Sox fan and we're getting into the nitty-gritty. His Sox are down 1-0 in the top of the 7 of the Yankees. So I know he'll stay focused. But we're taking him away from his favorite team. So apologies in advance. Steven's coming up next. We're with you until 10:35. I'm Jack Hillgrove on the Fan Evening Show.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.